Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome.
Hi.
It's episode 76-ish, something like that.
It's like every episode is Matt's age.
Oh, okay. At this point.
So at this point, it could be episode 400, it could be 76, but it's like around Matt's age.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
I missed you.
I miss you too. It was so good. We just recently did the Another Shot episode. In our last episode, we were teasing that we have a big case.
Did you like that?
I liked it. For this week's episode, and as you might have seen whenever you clicked into this episode, it is the case of Kaylee Anthony.
Yay.
Now, this is one that we've heard quite a few times. A lot of fans have been begging us. I'm actually surprised we haven't done it yet.
I think the interesting thing about this case is that I was at Bravo watching the case, like at my desk. We all have TVs at work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I watched this trial go down.
Oh.
So it feels very
organic,
like,
to your,
like, I know what's up here.
Totally. Yeah. Interesting. This one is a heartbreaking one about, you know, poor Kaylee Anthony, who, you know.
Oh, my God.
We'll get
into the tragedy of this case. It's just terrible.
Before we get into the case, Matthew, the bartender.
Yes.
What are we drinking this week? I actually have no clue.
If Matt has a middle name, what is it?
Probably like
Pompadour. Matt Pompadour, the bartender.
The bartender. Imagine that's his real
Matt,
last name too.
Is your middle name Pompadour?
Pompadour.
Absolutely.
You said on the other day that he looks like a Steve. Maybe it's Steve.
It could be a Steve.
I forget if that made it to the episode.
But that he was a Kevin from the Well Hung Kevin, and I was like,
and you confirmed
small, Pee-wee,
right? All right. I actually don't know what we're drinking this week. Usually Matt and I have a little convo, but I don't know.
And let's just say I'm a little hot in this room.
It's a little warm
in
here.
I'm with three, two-ish good-looking people.
Oh, not me?
Two.
Not Matt.
John,
got it.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure you know.
Megan's obviously the best looking.
Right,
two
yes.
Two good-looking people and one extraordinarily good-looking handsome
I wouldn't
man.
Call myself extraordinarily good-looking.
Or
I wasn't
a handsome
gonna say,
man.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that on air, but like, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll take it. What the fuck are we drinking?
Things are getting weird. Let's find out.
See, sips his tea.
We are drinking a Mr. Black Espresso Martini.
Ooh.
Can I just say, I was like feeling a little down before, and while Matt was printing, I was like, I need to go get a fucking cup of coffee. Megan was like, yeah, we have time. And then the coffee machine was broken, and you saw my heartbreak.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you came in.
I can't believe this, actually.
Heroes today.
Mr. Black.
Oh, what a sexy bottle.
It's a nice bottle.
It's called Mr. Black. It's a cold brew liqueur.
Oh.
All right. They make it in Australia, and it's just coming out here, so it's kind of a new thing.
Love it.
I'm trying to figure out the connection.
Never had it before.
I studied abroad in Australia.
Yeah, you did.
That's the connection.
Okay.
And my porn name is Mr. Black.
The distillery has a coffee press. I just
processed.
He was gonna fly by, John. Yeah. Thank you for
laughing. Yep.
John gave it to me, but Matt
You're
was
welcome.
Gonna just yep.
It's called being a good co-host.
It's a pity laugh.
Well, I'm trying to read something here. The distillery has a coffee roasting facility on site and has a special blend, and it's got one half the sugar and 10 times the coffee of other liqueurs. So it's really for coffee nerds.
Oh, okay. You know what? I love, I've talked about this on the show. I love a good coffee with some Baileys in it.
What? When you take it, when you get a cup of coffee, yeah. What do you take? How do you take it?
You know what? I don't actually drink black coffee. It's a little too bitter to me.
You like a latte guy?
I like a latte. Okay. Yeah. And you know what I've been really obsessed with now that the weather's finally starting to change? It finally feels like normal here in New York, at least. Are iced caramel macchiatos, which are frankly just lattes, but still.
Is a macchiato a latte?
I used to work at Starbucks. Let me differentiate, and then Matt, I want to get back to you because he's like setting up. So a latte is just the espresso.
Let's diminish your job here, Matt, but we have important things to discuss.
Is an espresso. It's two shots of an espresso with milk, and you mix it into
That's
the
a
milk.
Latte.
Exactly. A macchiato is just the milk with the espresso dripped on the top so that it then seeps down through the rest of the drink. And then you usually top it with, like, if it's a caramel macchiato, you put caramel sauce on the top.
For everyone listening, I want to know what you feel internally when John says seeps.
Seeps. Seeping and
soweling. Anyway,
keep going, Matt.
Matt, continue with your job.
Okay, so this martini has 30 milliliters of Mr. Black, 30 milliliters of vodka.
And how many milliliters is a Tershburn?
Is it milliliters?
Yeah.
Is what's a milliliter?
What's a milliliter?
It's a couple.
A couple of Tershburns? Got
no, that's
it.
An accurate, that's an
right.
accurate.
That's scientific.
That is science.
Yeah, that is science.
John, you were just telling me you're in an advanced science class, so you know.
The way you say things is just like the way you deliver. Yeah, it's science.
Can
like,
I finish the fucking recipe?
Sorry. He was about to either compliment or insult me.
He gets one segment per show. We need to respect that.
He gets small testy.
7.5 milliliters of simple syrup.
Okay.
And let me just say, someone else and brought in the simple syrup today. It wasn't even Matt.
It was Emily.
It
yes,
was Emily. And she was like,
true.
I have a cup of simple syrup. And I go, Matt was just sitting here. And I go, oh, okay.
Where did
Matt
she get
assistance.
It, come to think of it? Yeah. Where did she get that simple syrup?
I provided some sugar, quick dissolving sugar.
Oh, okay.
Couple Tershburns of dissolving sugar.
In the kitchen.
You know, at some point, and thank you, Matt, for that. I know that was tough to get through as we interrupted you over and over again. But at some point, I think we really do, maybe in another shot episode, sit down and figure out the exact measurement of a Tershburn so that then he can deliver the exact measurements. You know, it's a new hybrid measurement.
I do think you could have your own bar named Tershburn, and then you just have your own set of ingredients of things that we, like the Pompidou special.
The Pompidou special. By the way, while Matt's sitting here, we did address Matt's angina on the last episode, which is a heart condition that he has. Everyone looks at me weird when I say angina because it's
Do you not know that's a hard thing? You literally will not add a V
of
to
course.
It. Matt, did you see on our Facebook? We talked about this in another shot.
I haven't been invited to that.
Well, sweetie, get the fucking hint.
We're keeping him out of the show.
Get the hint. So a group of people wanted to pool money at like a GoFundMe page.
It's not happening, by the way.
To get him to say vagina, and then they were going to donate the money to the Innocence Project.
No, it's
How
not happening.
How amazing is that?
It's not happening. It's
Megan
not
is
happening.
For it. Megan?
I would donate.
Megan
said she'd donate.
I mean, listen, I think everyone can agree we'd rather hear you say vagina than angina.
Here's the thing, and we'll get back to the reason I brought up angina to begin with, which is let's wait until we have millions and millions of fans so that then it is truly a fundraiser. And then in that case, I will rethink about whether or not I will say the V word.
What if all of our fans are millionaires?
Even better.
So there
you
go. We don't need a million fans. We just need a couple fans that are millionaires.
That's true.
Just saying.
So, Matt, on the last full episode,
you had manginas over here.
You were having a heart palpitations. We didn't give you a chance to speak on another shot episode. So a lot of people were actually genuinely worried about you. So,
and to be fair, John and I forgot. That you
we
had
totally
an
forgot.
Issue.
We don't care.
Why is everyone asking us if Matt's okay?
Who cares?
And then we realized.
Yeah. Would you like to make a statement about your heart condition?
Not really.
Cool.
Not really? Great.
Oh, we
I
can
will
say he's
this.
Alive.
I will say this, though. Megan was super sweet and made me feel better.
Always.
And she took my pulse and she gave me a bottle of water. And I realized if I died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we addressed this.
I think John would feel a little bit bad, and I think Darren would have a sense of inconvenience.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I think I would be like, ugh.
But like,
I have to interview a new bartender. Like, I would be so pissed. You're so right.
She would have to relocate rooms, maybe.
Right. Yeah, you know, I hate a time change. Hate a room change.
She would probably go home to your girlfriend and complain about how I died and you had to change rooms.
He's so selfish.
There was a puddle in the middle of the room.
I was like, I had to call facilities.
To call facilities to come clean up his bag of bones.
And it stank the whole time.
Yeah. Well,
and then I'd kick him on the way out. Be like, bye, Matt. Yeah.
Just like stomp right over.
She was like mouthing to me, kindly go die in the bathroom.
No. I didn't say kindly. I just said die.
Die.
Just,
ooh, that's creepy.
Whisper.
I bet everyone listening in their cars are like freaked out. We're like, die.
I hope so. I hope they're saying it to themselves.
Yeah.
I hope they're, you know, everyone, you put the energy out in the world that you want to see coming back.
There you go. Die. Wouldn't it be really bad if he actually died, though, like after we said all of this? No. I just realized no.
No.
No, it wouldn't.
But anyway, I feel a thank pang you to of everyone. Guilt. I want to say thank you to all the people listening that were human beings.
Concerned.
And those are mainly just those of you in the Facebook group, which we're not allowing him in.
But I will say, most people who asked how you were would then hashtag be like, hashtag don't care, hashtag hope Matt's dead. And I was like, these are people. Hashtag dedicated.
We are amongst our people.
We really are.
Well, let's get into this week's tragic case.
Horrible.
Surrounding Kaylee Anthony.
I want you to kick it off this week. I decided. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, what's really important here is we don't normally tell the ending of a story first, but in this case, we're going to come right out and say it. A jury found Casey Anthony, the mother of Kaylee Anthony, not guilty of first degree murder and not guilty of even manslaughter in the death of her toddler, Kaylee Anthony. This is something very important to remember. You know, she,
no matter what you
not,
feel about
exactly,
the case,
yes,
like, she was found not guilty.
And we're saying this because Casey had lived under a cloud of suspicion, and it's important to keep the verdict in mind as you're listening to this story. I think that's also one thing that I think differentiates our show from a lot of the shows that talk about this case, and that's, you know, you can speculate all you want, but the truth of the matter here is that she was never convicted. So we have to keep that in mind.
100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, given the fact that, like I said, I saw this trial breakdown in Bravo. So Twitter was there and everyone was seeing it. And it was a big press.
Oh, yeah,
like,
totally.
It was a big thing. I mean, outside of the trial, I think whenever you say the name Casey Anthony or you hear Kaylee Anthony, people already have their biases about what they think. So just keep it aside. Let's keep all the facts of the case straight. And I think it's really important to, you know, serve justice where justice is served. She did serve a trial here and she was found not guilty.
Exactly. Well, so Casey Anthony was born in 1986, just like I was, and grew up in Orlando, Florida with her older brother, Lee Anthony, and parents, George and Cindy Anthony. And in interview for Casey Anthony, An American Murder Mystery, which aired on Investigation Discovery, Cindy described Casey as a, quote, very spirited child who had, quote, lots of energy.
I relate.
Totally. Absolutely. In high school, Cindy said Casey was, quote, very popular with tons of friends. Before her eventual trial, though, Casey was interviewed by psychiatrists to make sure she was competent. The court released documents of these interviews, providing a glimpse into Casey's history.
Love the sound effect.
Here comes our martinis. That's good. Yeah, we do. We should get into the microphone there, Matt. Thank you.
I will say Matt's arms do look buff, and I honestly want to thank me, you, and Megan for making his arms buff.
Is that right?
Yeah, because he shakes the martinis.
That's true.
And
that's
I feel
his
like
workout.
That's a great workout. So, Matt, you're fucking welcome.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, back to the
case. Sorry, I just had to put that out there.
No, it's fair. In school, Casey excelled in both sports and academics. Math was her favorite subject, and she played volleyball, soccer, and she ran track.
I'm relating to all of this.
I was just going to say, this is a very kind of typical American lifestyle, really.
Yeah, but she seems extremely all-American, well-rounded.
Yeah. Quote, she's liked by her school teachers, principals, and peers. She wins the citizenship awards. She wins junior achievement awards, wrote Dr. William Weitz, according to ABC News. So the documents also revealed that Casey was a tomboy who loved photography, telling Dr. Weitz that taking photographs had been a passion of hers since she was a child.
I was a tomboy. But grew up like heavily wearing my brother's clothes forever.
My sister was the same way. She's pretty much a tomboy.
Is your sister older or younger?
She's younger.
So she got your hand-me-downs?
Kind of. Like, she eventually, like, you know, grew out of that and like wanted her own thing. But when we were young, she loved to wear my shirts. I think it just made her feel like...
Honestly, my parents always said that they were were obsessed. They were like, great, we don't have to buy two fucking outfits. Like, we get to just repeat.
Oh, right, because you had
and
a brother.
And I was so excited to because I have an older brother. I was, like, so excited to wear his clothes.
Amazing. Well, so anyway, Casey, however, by the way, I didn't mean to, that wasn't in any way
dismissing. Fine. You're diminishing. Nope, you're diminishing me.
I can't win today. Casey, however, seemed to have a pattern of keeping secrets. At the end of her senior year, Casey's parents discovered she wasn't going to graduate.
Which has to be a shocker considering her accolades. That's what I was just going to say. Everything before, I think my parents would have been like,
what? Yeah. Well, they didn't find out until they showed up to her graduation ceremony. And noticed that Casey wasn't walking with her class, according to TV journalist Jan Velez Mitchell. So, like, imagine it's all systems go. You're winning awards. You're heading to your daughter's, graduation.
Expectations are high.
And then it's like crickets, you know? Well, according to Cindy, even though Casey was a half a credit shy from getting her diploma, she didn't stop her parents from throwing her a graduation party with all of her extended relatives. Well, half a credit, you know. Even a full credit, I would maybe not, but a half a credit. But Casey's biggest secret came out in June 2005.
When did you come out as gay?
I don't know. You know, that's a question I get asked pretty often. Thank you, Matt. He's giving us our drinks.
I don't
mean
to put you on the spot, but I'm like, I feel like for us, and maybe I don't know, but that's like a big secret. Not even like a secret, but just something that you want to be bottled up inside until you're really ready to tell everyone.
For sure. Yeah.
So when did you come out?
Well, I didn't ever like have a big coming out moment. I know everyone kind of...
Your family didn't throw you
a coming out party?
You were half a credit shy of being heterosexual. They do that.
They do that nowadays.
No,
you know,
I
parents
know.
Do that.
Thank God. Let's cheers as John...
Yes, cheers, bitch, as we talk about my coming out story briefly.
Were
cheers,
you in college Matt. Or high school?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the first person I ever told.
This is another shot.
That's true.
I'm just thinking of secrets. Wow.
Maybe we should.
This is good.
Maybe
Matt.
We should hold this for another shot.
Oh my God, this is really,
just really good.
This drink.
Okay, fuck you for coming out. Never mind. We're saving it. This is really good, Matt.
How about this? We'll tease it into the next another shot. My answer is that I didn't really have a one moment. I guess by high school, I was telling people, but it wasn't like I came out all at once. You know, I guess I kind of, little by little.
I don't know. That was me too. All right, fine. We'll save it for now. I was just curious.
Thanks, Matt, for ruining the bit, by the way.
But let me just say, this is curing my coffee fix. So thank
this
you
is
so
much. Really,
it's really,
really
delicious
good.
That Mr. Black Stuff highly recommend.
I can't even taste the alcohol.
Was that a Gina Pace recommendation?
Our staff boozer, yes. He is saying yes.
And is it available in the United States now?
Mr. Black. No. All right.
Okay. Awesome. I highly recommend.
Yeah.
Delish.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Well, as we mentioned, so Casey's biggest secret came out in June 2005. She had put on about 20 pounds and a few family members suspected that she was pregnant.
Okay.
At a family wedding, Casey's uncle asked Cindy if her daughter was pregnant and she told him no. Cindy later said, quote, I really didn't know Casey was pregnant until after she told me. I knew she wasn't feeling well. Casey had some irregular periods for several months and I assumed a lot of it was bloating. end quote. So, okay. By the way, moms always know. It feels like
I'm also happy you didn't give me that quote, because I feel like you usually give me the female centric.
The female stuff?
Yes. Proud of you.
Thank you very much. Proud I really buried my way through that
that's
one.
That's your big secret.
Yeah, that's my big secret. A few weeks after the wedding, Casey stopped by her mother's work and told her she was pregnant. She was more than 30 weeks along.
Wow.
Her parents were ecstatic. You know, I think that's something, you know, there's a lot of drama going on here, but her parents seemed to be ecstatic.
That's good. She has the support she needs.
Yeah. According to George and Cindy, neither of them pressed Casey very hard about who the father was and didn't want to put any, quote, pressure on her. Casey was never publicly identified the father. Casey's parents converted their computer room into a nursery for their future granddaughter and decked it out in a Winnie the Pooh theme.
Oh, were you obsessed with, like, a certain, you know, Andy, for example, my boss, loves Snoopy.
Yeah.
Like, that's his thing. That was, like, his childhood thing.
Yeah.
Did you have anything like that when you were a kid? Did you like any cartoons? Or he just made an embarrassing,
I have something. I mean, I and my grandmother were obsessed, as many people were.
Spice Girls.
Hello Kitty.
Spice Girls, yes, that's true, Matt. But not Hello Kitty. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
As if it was. There are no more secrets here if it was Hello Kitty.
Right.
We were obsessed with Beanie Babies.
Oh,
as
my God,
so
collected.
Many were.
No, I collected.
But Darren, I'm saying, we'll talk about this on another shot. A room in my grandmother's home is lined all the way around with four tiers of shelves. And I will
still?
Take it, still to this day. It hasn't moved in, like, I think 15 years. And there are probably $20,000 worth
serial
of
killer.
Beanie
You're a serial
Babies.
You're a fucking psychopath.
There was something about the allure of, like, them being released and, like, finding them at stores. And there was, like, a weird, like, small town community of people that were somewhat, like, competitive with, like, searching for Beanie. I know some of you listening have done this. You have to let me know if you're a Beanie Baby avid collector.
I was a Curious George fan. Still
okay,
am. Collected
that's
interesting. Tons of Curious George stuff. But
I didn't know that about you.
Well, there's plenty.
Welcome
you know
to
what?
The
this
show.
Is why we have another
this
shot.
This is why we have a show.
I want to screw Martinis and Myrtle. Let's just get to another shot because I have so many questions.
A spinoff podcast.
So many questions
about the Beanie Babies.
Matt,
Megan, what were you going to say?
Were you guys obsessed with anything when you were a kid?
Matt's like, we didn't have cartoons yet. We just drew on
leaves.
No,
Matt's
leaves.
Like, let's get through the fucking
no,
episode.
Was,
I know.
In the 50s, we had Popeye.
All right. That's what
okay.
I expected. By the way, I hate spinach to this day because of Popeye. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Megan? What about you?
Did you have anything?
My bedroom was like a library.
Library.
So I just had books.
Says the lawyer. Of course.
Says the lawyer. Yeah.
I did have a periodic table of elements framed in my room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's
I had
what
a Playboy poster in my room. I was hiding a lot. We'll get to it eventually.
Okay.
We'll get to it eventually.
Let's continue on.
Megan read Torts.
Torts. Yeah. Nice.
Oh, as yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God!
She read legal briefs.
Legal
it's
briefs.
A couple Tershberg.
Yeah. Exactly.
Set him up for
that's
that
exactly
one.
Exactly right. Thank you, Megan.
I don't actually know.
Exactly.
Can I guess? Does anyone know what a tort is? Yes.
A tort?
No,
no,
I know you know. It is. Is it a piece of a case that is an example of something?
The lawyers on the line are like, we know, but they don't want to answer.
Like, get to the fucking details of the case already.
Here,
I have it. I have it here. Yes, it's a law. A wrongful act or an infringement of a right other than under contract leading to civil legal liability.
Yeah, that's what Megan was reading.
That's what Megan was up to.
Incredibly fascinating.
Fascinating stuff here.
I'm never asking a tangential question again. I'm done. Bye.
All right, back to this the story here of Kaylee and Casey. So
Winnie the Pooh,
all in her room. They also threw her a baby shower complete with everything she needed, including clothes, diapers, formula, and car seats. That's pretty typical. In America. On August 5th, 2005, Casey gave birth to Kaylee Marie Anthony. According to CNN, once Kaylee was born, Cindy and Casey started getting into arguments. Oh. Casey allegedly found her mom to be, quote, controlling, and Cindy was pushing her daughter because she thought she needed to be more responsible. This is kind of connecting here from what we know about
yeah.
them, you know?
Yeah.
Casey's brother Lee would later testify that Casey told him her mom had called her an, quote, unfit mother, and Casey reportedly said, quote, maybe I am. Casey continued to live at her parents' house with Casey. So this is
With Kaylee.
Well,
yes. That's a tough point, though, because you're living with your parents.
You're 19 years old.
You're young. You're not financially stable. Most 19-year-olds are not financially stable to live on their own, just yet, at least. You have a kid. And so even though the kid is yours, you know, but you're living under your parents' roof. So it's like, who's making the rules? You know, if someone's paying for those diapers, do you have a right? Do you have a say in, you know,
you're hitting
where
the
those
nail
diapers
on the
should go?
I really think you're hitting the nail on your head here, because I know personally of people in my family. I know friends who were young mothers in a very similar situation. So, and that dynamic definitely came to
a
head.
It's common. This is not, you know, specific to this case, but we see it all the time, even in friends who don't have kids at a young age, but who just live at home. You know, like when their parents are asking them to be home for dinner or do this or do that, it's like, they're an adult, but you're also living under their roof.
Well, and also sometimes these people are very financially dependent. So there's a whole financial tie to that as well. Yeah. So.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into the disturbing part here where Kaylee goes missing.
Yeah. So according to the book Imperfect Justice by prosecutor Jeff Ashton and former New York Times reporter Liz Pulitzer, on June 16th, 2008, Casey and Kaylee pulled away from the Anthony house in the family's white Pontiac Sunfire.
That famous Pontiac Sunfire.
We're actually going to be quoting some of Ashton's book here. It's important to note that this is the prosecutor's point of view and version of events.
Okay.
So it's a prosecutor's point of view.
Got it.
According to CNN, the last time Kaylee was seen alive, at least by more than one person, was when she got into the car and blew a kiss to her grandfather as they drove away.
It's heartbreaking.
Which is, gut-wrenching.
Yeah, I mean, again, she's how old at this point? She's like two or something?
She's a babes.
Yeah, two years old, yeah.
So for the next 31 days, Kaylee was nowhere to be seen. Over a phone call, Casey told Cindy that she was going on a vacation to Jacksonville, Florida with a former boyfriend, and they just didn't need to worry. Mm. Everything was under control. On July 15th, the Anthonys received a notice that the Pontiac Sunfire had been found abandoned and taken to an impound lot. Which would terrify me as a parent
if
I found that I hadn't spoken to my kid or granddaughter and I find their car is abandoned.
Right.
So the car had actually been at the lot since June 30th. Again, they called on July 15th, so it'd been approximately 2 weeks.
Yeah.
According to prosecutor Jeff Ashton, Cindy was frantic because she thought Casey and Kaylee were in Jacksonville, but the car was in Orlando.
Mm.
So when they arrived,
things aren't connecting in her world.
Right. I mean, that's a big difference.
And she's the grandmother. So.
Of course. And when they arrived at the towing yard, George went to claim the Pontiac while Cindy waited inside their car. As George approached the vehicle, he detected a smell coming from the trunk. George, who had previously worked as a police officer, thought the smell was reminiscent of a decomposing body, according to ABC News. George later said, quote, that particular smell, whenever you smell it, it's something you never forget. It's a very distinct odor. Mm. So as he opened the trunk, he said, please God, don't let this be Casey or Kaylee. At this point, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
All he knows is there's a smell coming from her car.
So thankfully, there was only a bag of trash with some maggots, reported ABC News.
Yeah.
He drove the Pontiac home and had to keep all the windows down because of this horrendous stench.
Oh, God.
Cindy got in touch with Casey and picked her up from her boyfriend's house, but Casey didn't talk about Kaylee's whereabouts. I mean, the girl's young.
Yeah.
Cindy ultimately called 911 to report that Kaylee was missing. Here's a partial transcript.
Okay.
I'll be Cindy Anthony, and you want to be the 911 operator?
Sure, and I've heard this before, and it's very interesting, disturbing
Cindy
in a way.
Cindy is crying here. I'm not even going to try and, like, I'm not going to pretend to hear because it's so serious, but I called a little bit ago. The deputy sheriff's not here. I found out my granddaughter has been taken. She's been missing for a month. Her mother finally admitted that she's been missing.
Okay, what is the address that you're calling from?
We're talking about a three-year-old little girl. My daughter finally admitted that the babysitter stole her. I need to find her.
Your daughter admitted that the baby is where?
That the babysitter took her a month ago. My daughter's been looking for her. I told you my daughter was missing for a month. I just found her today, but I can't find my granddaughter. And she just admitted to me that she's been trying to find her herself. There's something wrong. I found my daughter's car today, and it smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car. The operator then asked to speak with Casey, and Cindy gave her the phone. Here's a partial transcript. You be 911. I'll be Casey this time.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit what's going on?
My daughter has been missing for the last 31 days.
And you know who has her?
I know who has her. I tried to contact her, and I actually received a phone call today from a number that is no longer in service. I did get to speak to my daughter for about a minute.
And you lost her a month ago?
31 days. It's been 31 days.
Who has her? Do you have a name?
Her name is Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez.
Who is that? Babysitter?
She's been my nanny for about a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Why are you calling now? Why didn't you call 31 days ago?
I've been looking for her and have gone through other resources to try to find her, which is stupid. End scene.
End scene.
Police arrived shortly after and started speaking with the family.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I think, you know, right off the bat, I think this is posing a lot of different questions. I think when you hear the transcript, a lot of things are popping into their mind. Why wouldn't I do this? Why wouldn't I do that? But I think it's really hard to say from an outsider's perspective what we would do in that moment. A lot of times we ask Matt, you know, as the parent in the room, how would you handle this? What would go down? And all I can really fathom, and Matt, you probably have a better sense of it than I would, but if your kid is missing, I don't even know where the first mind for me would go. I mean, I personally panic anytime I can't, like, call my girlfriend and she's, like, napping. And my mind immediately goes to, like, the negative automatic. I'm like, she's dead. She died in a car accident. It's fucking done.
Yep.
But I don't know if your first automatic response would be, like, let me call 911 immediately. Do you want to give it time to see if it's something else? It's, as a parent, you have it's so emotional, right? It's hard to say what's going to happen.
For myself, I would have fucking called 911 immediately. But that's just
you. Well, I think, by the way, most people would probably do that. It's hard to say.
They probably would. I'm just trying to be a little bit devil's advocate here and saying, like, I don't know what it's like to have someone like that missing.
Right.
So after 31 days, you'd like to think, yes.
I was talking to my sister about this, and this can be for another shot, too. We should be, like, marking all the different things we want to talk about on our another shot episodes. But I am of the mindset that I would absolutely be one of those parents that puts a chip in their child. I know it's crazy to say. I know it's controversial. I know it seems privacy, blah, blah, blah. But I would rather have that as a peace of mind in the event that they go missing than just not have an understanding of where they are. I know it's crazy.
What's going on that phone?
I had an email.
Jared was very distracted and given this weird smile.
Sly. John and I had another podcast for a while, and one of the first things I told, because I watch an enormous amount of TV.
Right.
And so John would always ask me, like, what are you watching on television? And the thing that I got him into was this show called Black Mirror. And the first episode, which is really, really, really
disturbing.
The first episode is really disturbing. So I made John watch it. And after that, he was like,
never watching
never
again.
Never again. Fucking no. This recent episode, which I'm sure Megan knows what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Has an episode of a parent implanting a chip where you can essentially tune in and, like, see through your kid's perspective what they're looking at.
Right.
But along the lines of implanting a GPS chip. And it's like, what are the advantages, but also what are the really disadvantages of doing that? After seeing that episode, I'm not sure I can definitively say I would stick a GPS chip in my kid. Yeah. But it's just it's something to think about.
Definitely something to think about. And I wouldn't want to see what my kids, like, that's way too much.
Well, as it Should turns we ever out, get there? It doesn't end well. But, watch the episode.
Okay, watch the episode. But, you know, for me, I would want to know where they are. Let's just put it that
now
way.
Now I get you.
Then maybe when they're 18, they can have, you know, the option to surgically have it taken out. Fine.
Yeah. And when you find out your kids are always hanging out with me.
Right.
Then
it's
really
a problem.
Have to worry.
Exactly.
Why are you at Darren's again?
Why are you over at Auntie Darren's?
Yeah, Auntie.
All right. Well, let's get into the investigation. So there's obviously a lot of crazy stuff that just went down.
Sure.
Casey told police that 31 days ago, she dropped Kaylee off at her Zanny the Nanny's
Zenaida.
Apartment before heading to work at Universal Studios, where she said she was an event manager. Okay. Interesting detail.
It is interesting that she had a nickname.
Yeah, Zanny the Nanny.
Hey, that's easy. I like that.
Let's see what happens with that.
Yeah.
So she said that when she returned to the apartment after work, no one was at the apartment. When she called Zaneta, Zanny the nanny, a recording said the number was out of service.
Okay.
After a few hours, Casey said she drove around to places Zaneta would usually take Kaylee when she cared for her, but she was unable to find them.
Okay, but presumably, let's say everything that we said, this is what we know.
Yeah.
If the number is out of service, you know, let's if you took out. A kid,
right.
No shit, your number is going to be out of service. You know what I mean? You're going to... Yeah. You're going to flee judge over here.
Well, she eventually went back to her boyfriend Tony Lazzaro's apartment. She said she didn't contact law enforcement because she was afraid Zaneta would harm Kaylee. I think that's a rational thought. Casey claimed the only people she confided in were two friends from Universal Studios. After taking down her statement, police asked Casey to take them to the apartment where her nanny lived. When they arrived, Casey stayed in the patrol car and pointed to Zaneta's unit. The investigator went upstairs to the apartment and knocked, but no one answered. He looked through a window and saw that there were no pieces of furniture or personal belongings. Hmm. The unit was empty.
Okay, though. Hmm. If you're taking a kid...
No, you're right.
You're getting the fuck out of Dodge.
Right. Detectives decided to drop Casey back off at home. While they continued their investigation into the night, they met with the apartment complex's manager, who didn't know anyone by the name of Zaneta and didn't recognize a photograph of Kaylee. The manager said the apartment in question had been vacant for almost 5 months. Casey's story just didn't add up, and so investigators went to Universal Studios in search of the two friends Casey had allegedly told about Kaylee's disappearance. That is the obvious, like, next piece of the puzzle to figure out. They spoke with Universal Studios security director, according to the prosecutor's version of events as laid out in his book, and found out Casey hadn't worked at the park since 2006 when she was fired.
Okay. That's not adding up then. That doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look good. What's more, she never even worked as an event planner. She had only sold photos inside one of the park's souvenir shops. Stunned, detectives decided to call Casey and ask if they could pick her up and bring her to Universal Studios to talk. They asked her to bring her Universal ID card, according to the prosecutor's book, but she said she had misplaced
it. That is very fucking clever, though, of the police to ask her to bring that card.
Right, of course.
Very fucking clever.
Well, they want to, you know, get through and
by the way.
Yeah.
I got my ID right here next to her. This morning.
With the Universal, here at NBC Universal, no less.
That's right.
With the Universal security director, investigators met Casey at the employee entrance. She went up to the security guard and said she lost her ID card and gave him her name. When he said he didn't have her name on file, she told him to check again. The guard then asked the name of her supervisor, but his name also wasn't on file.
That doesn't sound good.
Still, Casey continued to claim that she was an employee. At a standstill, the security director let Casey and the detectives inside. This coffee's getting to me. Casey allegedly led the man down various hallways to the office where she said she worked. According to an American murder mystery, she even waved at other employees while they walked through the building. Once they reached a hallway in part of the main building, Casey turned around and confessed, quote, okay, I don't really work here.
I mean,
it's just like...
I don't even know what to say.
Well, my thing, too, is I'm curious about the investigators, the police officers here. I feel like employment status checks are pretty easily done, so I don't know why they would...
Well, maybe they were trying to catch her in her own lie or seeing how far it could go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if she's claiming this, like, let's see this play out as opposed to, like, showing all of our cards immediately.
That makes sense. You're
but,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of wondering what's going through Casey's mind at this point because it's pretty hard to... like prove employment of a place that you don't work, especially when you're right
there.
That's
what I was saying.
And there's,
you
know, there's computerized systems to check and they're asking for your supervisor. So I'm wondering how she's thinking she's going to get away with that.
Yeah.
It's also kind of odd to invite your parents to your graduation when you're not
right.
graduating.
There's lots of secrets.
Lots of secrets. For me, it's a Playboy poster. It is what it is.
So investigators actually confront Casey for not being truthful. It's a whole enigma going on over here.
Right.
Detectives took Casey to an empty room inside the Universal offices to interview her. You want to be the detective?
Yeah, let's do
and
a little,
I'll be Casey.
Exactly. Okay. I know and you know that everything you've told me is a lie. Is that correct?
Not everything I told you.
Okay, pretty much everything you told me, including where Kaylee is right now.
That I don't know where she is.
Sure you do.
I absolutely do not know where she is.
and scene.
The detectives told Casey Zaneta's apartment had been vacant for months and that they thought she had lied about it. Casey defended her story, according to CNN, saying, quote, I dropped her off at that apartment, end quote.
Ooh, I had never heard that quote before. Interesting.
Well, later in the interview, a detective said, quote, either you gave Kaylee to someone and you don't want anyone to find out because you think you're a bad mom, or something happened to Kaylee and Kaylee's buried somewhere or in a trash can somewhere and you had to do something with it.
Something to do with it.
Something to do with it. Yeah. Sorry. So still Casey stuck to her story that Zanny the nanny had taken Kaylee and that she had no clue where her daughter was. Detectives decided to arrest Casey, according to ABC News, charging her with child neglect, filing false official statements, and obstructing a criminal investigation. While in jail, Casey called her mother to get her boyfriend Tony Lazzaro's phone number. Which, okay.
Yeah.
According to the book Imperfect Justice, here's a transcript of that call.
I'll be Cindy.
You are such a Cindy.
Oh, I love the name Cindy, by the way.
And I am a Casey.
All right. I don't know what your involvement is, sweetheart. You're not telling me where she's at.
Because I don't fucking know where she's at. Are you kidding me?
Casey, don't waste your call screaming and hollering at me.
Waste my call? Oh, sitting here in the jail?
Well, whose fault is it you're sitting in the jail? Are you blaming me that you're sitting in the jail?
Not my fault.
Blame yourself for telling lies. What do you mean it's not your fault, sweetheart? If you had told them the truth and not lied about everything, they wouldn't...
Do me a favor. Just tell me what Tony's number is. I don't want to talk to you right now. Forget it.
End scene. Which
hostile.
I was just going to say, that exchange, which I also had never heard of, very hostile. I find it interesting that Cindy calls her sweetheart. She says, don't yell at me, sweetheart.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a mother-daughter relationship, yeah. But I think when Casey's like, it's not my fault, and she's sort of blatantly, you know, she lied to police. Yeah. I think we can all say, like, okay, I don't really work at Universal. How can you not own up to that?
Yeah, exactly.
You've been caught. You're lying.
That just sounded like a John Waters movie.
Interesting.
That's actually fair. As long as I'm not eating shit off the ground, and then it can be a John Waters movie.
What's John? I don't know John Waters movie.
John Waters is. Have you ever? He's very tall and thin. He's a very thin mustache.
Oh yeah. Yes.
He does very risque films. I would say they're raunchy.
Leave it to Matt to chime in with the John Waters
drag
stuff.
Drag queens eat shit off. Yeah, Pink Flamingos.
Hairspray?
Pink Flamingos.
My favorite is polyester.
Oh.
Have you seen that? It might be before your time.
Well, sweetie, it's definitely before my time.
Is this around the era of Beanie Babies by any chance?
You know
or
what,
no?
John? Go no? home, watch okay. Pink Flamingos.
All right.
Highly recommend.
No. John? Are you...
Megan,
no.
Back me up here. John,
no.
Go home and watch Pink
John,
Flamingos.
I won't watch any
John.
Of it. Yeah. Wait, I'm curious why you're so protective of me about this.
Do not do that.
Now you're curious.
Now I'm curious. We'll see what happens.
That's exactly what I'm...
Scar you.
For life.
Oh, okay. Then I won't be doing it.
There are movies that I think you might like by him, but that's not one of them.
That...
John's never seen a drag queen eating some dogs.
Yeah, it's casual. He lives in New York City.
Yeah, I've seen this on the subway every day.
On July 16th, 2008, the day Casey was arrested, Tony called the police. He told detectives he had met Casey on Facebook in May and had been dating since June. Tony said the last time he saw Kaylee was early June. He said Casey had basically been living at his house for a month, but according to CNN, he testified that Casey never mentioned Kaylee's disappearance.
Interesting.
On July 17th, Casey made her first court appearance and had retained defense attorney Jose Baez. A judge initially ordered she should be held without bond.
Interesting. And can we mention Jose Baez was also the attorney for Aaron Hernandez, which I think a lot of people don't realize.
Yes.
Yeah.
But really,
yes.
Like a very good.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
good.
I mean, they call him the modern Johnny Cochran,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah. Yes. He's one of those very high-profile lawyers, for sure. Well, let's continue here with the investigation. With Casey behind bars, detectives continued their investigation after hearing, or rather listening to Cindy Anthony's 911 call claiming it, quote, smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car, end quote. They took the Pontiac to the forensics garage. Investigators brought in a cadaver dog, which alerted detectives at the trunk of the vehicle. A sample of the trunk's carpet lining was taken for testing, as well as air samples. Investigators also found small flies and a hair, which they sent out for testing, which I want to just say something.
Sounds like my apartment.
I was just going to say, most people's trunks aren't super clean and like,
no.
You know,
and it's going to have hair in it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now.
I found that, I just wanted to defend the Pontiac Sunfire for that, at least. While they waited for the forensic results, police interviewed Cindy and George Anthony about the Pontiac. Cindy wasn't so sure about her previous comment about the, quote, dead body smell. She told police, according to ABC News, that the smell could have easily come from the trash bag full of garbage that they found in the trunk.
Okay.
Which I think is fair, yeah. Like I said, trunks are not a place to, you know, be hanging out.
And garbage bags don't smell good.
No. George, on the other hand, told detectives, according to a transcript published by CNN, quote, well, I need to set the record straight. Where this is leading, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about that. But I had bad vibes the very first day when I got that car, end quote. Hmm. While in custody, several conversations between Casey and her parents were recorded. In one conversation, she continued to claim that she didn't know what happened to her daughter. Quote, I'm not in control over any of this because I don't know what's going on. My entire life has been taken from me. You don't understand. I don't have any answers because I don't know what's going on. I can't even say anything to you guys. I want Kaylee, and that's not even getting put on the air, which it should be, end quote. In another conversation, Casey seemed to allude that she thought Kaylee was alive and safe. So I'll be Cindy and you be Casey.
Obviously.
What's your gut telling you right now?
Telling me that she's okay.
Okay. And your gut tells you that she's close or she's hiding?
She's not far. I know in my heart she's not far. I can feel it.
Scene. I love how we do very dramatic scenes.
Well, of course. Yeah.
During this time, police also contacted a woman they found by the name of Zenaida Gonzalez.
It was like a John Travolta moment. Adele Dazeem.
The wickedly talented Adele Dazeem. The way he says wickedly has really just haunted me.
Wickedly.
It's fine. She lived about 30 minutes outside Orlando. This is Zenaida we're talking about here, but did not know Casey or Kaylee Anthony and said she had never been employed as a nanny.
Oh.
And it's important to note that no one by the name of Zenaida Gonzalez has ever been associated with this case.
That's pretty important to know.
Obviously, yeah, yes. Definitely. According to prosecutor Jeff Ashton, Zenaida was shown photos of the mother and daughter and gave a sworn statement she did not recognize them. Casey was also unable to point out the Zenaida they had found in an array of photos shown to her, wrote Jeff Ashton. So basically, there's
so
no connection here.
But also, like, what name are you creating in your fucking mind?
Yeah. At a bond hearing on July 22nd, detectives shared what they considered to be evidence they found in the trunk of the Pontiac. The hair that they claimed appeared to be Kaylee's, and the fact that cadaver dogs had alerted human decomposition. Her bail was set at $500,000. In the eventual trial that would happen, which we'll get to, of course, Casey's defense very effectively argued to the jury that the evidence was, quote, fantasy forensics. Now, we talked about the case. We'll get to the case, too. But I think the defense did do a very good job of explaining this out to the jury.
I think so.
George and Cindy then organized a search campaign for their granddaughter, setting up ground searches and making Kaylee merchandise. Thousands of volunteers searched for weeks, but they didn't find anything. With all the media attention on the case, several publications broadcast public case records released by the state, including Cindy's 911 call. The public also learned through police interviews with one of Casey's childhood friends that during her pregnancy, Casey said she wanted to put the baby up for adoption, which I don't think that says anything, but it's interesting to note that she was interested in that particular
thing.
Casey was dubbed, quote, the most hated mom in America by the media, which was obsessed by the case. And like I said, I think it's important to note that Casey is getting labeled here with the, quote, most hated moniker. But there hasn't really been any evidence against her at this point. When you look at it from a trial perspective, you know, you can speculate, you can let your mind wander, but nothing has really pointed to her being a part of this disappearance.
Nothing.
You know, she had told a number of lies about where she worked and everything, but I don't feel like there are any smoking guns.
Sure.
You know?
And people can lie under duress or if they feel like need to protect something down the line, but it doesn't necessarily say like, okay, well, because you lied, you've murdered your kid.
Exactly.
I agree with that. I think the thing that where the most hated comes from most of all is probably this 31 days.
For sure.
You know?
Right. When you say that you would call police immediately.
A lot of these mistruths, you know, I feel like get people's mind wandering and then it just turns into a media spectacle.
It's really easy to turn into a mob scene, I think, with these things.
On August 21st, Casey posted bond and returned home to her parents' house to be placed on house arrest. The Anthony family home was harassed day and night by protesters who believed Cindy and George were harboring a killer, and they held signs that said, quote, baby killer, end quote, my mommy did it.
Oh my God.
Which is horrible. And I've seen some of that footage of like them, you know, fending people off of their homes and stuff. It's crazy. According to ABC News, on October 14th, with what investigators consider to be forensic evidence from the trunk, back from testing, police arrested Casey Anthony and charged her with first-degree murder, aggravated child abuse, aggravated manslaughter, and providing false information to law enforcement. So that's a lot to be charged with.
That's a lot.
I mean,
what we know is definitely false information to law enforcement.
Exactly, yeah. So we're going to end episode one here, sort of. The next episode, yeah, we will get into Kaylee's body being found, the trial, Casey being acquitted on charges of first-degree murder and manslaughter, which is important.
No spoiler alerts here, because it's been, we all know this case.
We know what's going
much.
On. We also talk about how some of the prosecution, mm-hmm, that's almost a tersh burn. Prosecution's case fell apart and why the defense was effective.
How do you spell that, John?
I don't even want to start. I'm telling you, this coffee drink's got me going crazy.
Yeah.
For example, there were internet searches that seemed damning. I think if you guys have heard about this case, you might know what those are. But there was no way of knowing who made those searches. A carpet sample from Casey's trunk tested positive for chloroform. However, a chemist told jurors that testing from the trunk primarily showed the presence of gasoline. Other compounds like chloroform were also found, but in very small amounts that, quote, gave very low responses, end quote.
Okay.
Casey also drew suspicion because of her behavior following Kaylee's disappearance. The roommate of her boyfriend at the time said that she partied following Kaylee's disappearance and entered a hot body contest. But as we've seen on Martinis and Murder before,
you're done, sweetie. You're not even invited to part two.
People react to grief very differently, and the defense called in an expert who testified that young people who experience loss are, quote, reluctant grievers and may engage in, quote, very risky behavior.
Yeah, that could be a way to like dampen how they feel because they don't want to deal with it.
I feel like in my own personal life, I know people who have had loss, not necessarily people who were ever charged for these things, but
they all enter the hot
body contest.
That's
no,
a thing.
No, but I think we know. We've seen people react differently. We've talked about that extensively.
Yeah, and that's not, you know, that's not definitive.
No,
and
definitely
it's easy to judge, I think, from an outsider's perspective, but we don't know what's going on in their mind.
Similarly, Casey was derided in the media for getting a tattoo with the word Bella Vita, which means beautiful life in Italian. But Casey did explain the meaning of the tattoo to a psychiatrist in a way that actually could make sense. She says, quote, "You talk about the beauty in life, but if you look at it backwards, it creates an irony in terms of how my life has turned out." So there's a sort of irony there.
People get tattoos for the dumbest reasons and the best reasons, and that's a personal choice.
Exactly. So these are just some of the points we're going to cover on episode two. So as we'll see, the defense poked holes in a lot of what looked weird or concerning about Casey and the case, and ultimately she was found not guilty of anything to do with Kaylee's death. So we'll get into more of that on next week's full episode.
Yes.
Well, let's get into listener shout-outs, Darren.
Okay, way to bring down the room, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then bring it back up. Angel on Twitter says, "Finally, after 2.5 months of binging Martinis and Murder, I am finally caught up. I love that Carpe Darren and H.A. Thrasher, and I guess Matt. Got a serious craving for Taco Bell, and I have no idea what I'm going to listen to on my drive to work. Hashtag Dedicator. Welcome to the family, Angel. I'm surprised it took you only 2.5 fucking months.
Everyone talks about binging. I know I've said this 1,000 times.
They must be sick of us.
I'm like, how do you do this? Thanks for joining the show, Angel. We're excited to have you. Karen in the Martinis and Murder Facebook group says, oh, I love this. For any The Office fanatics out there, fanatics like me in here, I had already tweeted about this, so I thought I'd share with this group. Matt the bartender is Toby Flenderson. I feel like Darren is Michael Scott. Therefore, Matt is the Scranton Strangler. It makes so much sense. And for anybody who watches The Office, Matt, I don't think you've watched The Office to know any of those references, right?
Kinda.
I don't know. I don't watch The Office, but I know who Michael Scott is.
Michael Scott's like the very aggressive. I can see why she's saying it's you. Not that you're aggressive, but like, you know, you're sort of running the ship in a lot of ways.
I'm aggressive.
Toby Flenderson is a guy that works for Michael Scott, who Michael Scott hates. Anytime he's around, he just like is disgusted by him. It's really hilarious.
That's funny.
And in the show, there is a serial killer named the Scranton Strangler, and it only makes sense that Matt would be the Scranton Strangler. I think it all makes sense here.
That seems evidence enough for me. So that would work in court.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm happy with that.
So thank you, Karen, for writing that. I'm a huge fan of The Office. I've watched every season, and that really just made me laugh hard.
I love it.
Love it. All right, well, we will be back next week. We'll have another shot coming up in just a few days, and then part two of the Kaylee Anthony.
Part
two. All right. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.